If you're self-employed or you have maybe some small side hustle that you do, selling artwork, OnlyFans, Patreon, you should get an accountant to help you figure out what you can claim on your taxes and what you can't. I found out that I could claim a whole lot more than I was doing, and it has resulted in me paying thousands of dollars less in taxes a year. And that is thanks to M3 Virtual Accounting's Molly Morris. Check out Molly at m3virtualaccounting.com and get a free consultation to find out if she can help you. That's m3virtualaccounting.com.
This is an Unspoiled Network podcast.
This is Unspoiled, some spoiled, you know the drill. Yada yada, chapters 60 and 61, Tyrion and Sansa. In these chapters, we get to see Joffrey choke and die. It was too quick. It was too quick.
He didn't
deserve such an easy death. Welcome to Unspoiled.
Monsters are dangerous, and just now, kings are dying like flies.
I am the king!
Fuck the king.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Natasha.
I'm Rashawn.
All right, Rashawn, that shit lay was it quick on me.
That shit was so fast. It was not nearly as satisfying as I needed it to be.
Agree.
Which now I feel, because I remember at the time being like, boy, they really made that into a spectacle, didn't they? Like, his face got all purple and shit.
Yeah.
But you know what? They were right to do it.
Yep. Honestly, I kind of appreciated seeing it on screen because, and I just stay, even on screen, I stay saying that was not good enough because I needed this boy to really suffer. And it's like maybe 2 or 3 minutes and then he's gone. Mm-mm. I need a lot more than that, but I guess I'm just going to have to sit over here and be vindictive and unsatisfied. And the overall thing that we have happening here is the wedding itself, the death of Joffrey, and then when we are in Sansa's chapter, she has vanished and Tyrion is like, where's Sansa? Help me, Sansa. And then he turns, this bitch is gone. And she escapes with the help of her Florian.
Yeah.
He doesn't make it any further.
He does not. I was curious, how this particular plot beat was going to play in the book versus the show. And this part with her escape was very similar to what we saw in the show. I was wondering, you know, the whole time, like in the back of my head, like, is it really Peter that's behind this? Is that who's going to be on the ship? So I wasn't sure who was going to be there until we got there, because I really, really was like, maybe it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Peter.
Yep.
Being all weird. Your mother gave me her virginity. Weird. How could I not come and save you, sir?
I swear to God, this sir. Man keeps saying this. He is so serious about it, too. It's really weird. Like, every time Peter talks about taking Kat's virginity, it doesn't feel like he's telling a lie.
He believes it. It's a fucking George Costanza.
It's like he said it so many times he started to believe it.
Like, it's not a lie if you believe it's true.
Because, like, we know she fucking didn't. We were in her head. So it's just a bizarre thing to keep through. And he's so free with it.
Mm-hmm.
He is so out here just saying it to fucking anybody. It is just to the woman's daughter. Like, what are you doing, you weirdo? Oh, my God. He's such a creep. But we are getting way ahead of ourselves. We got to back up. Let's talk about Tyrion, because his audiobook chapter is like an hour and something minutes long. Sansa's is only like 25 minutes. He gets a lot more time. And when we begin, he is already in the midst of the ceremony at the Sept. And he is thinking over Joffrey and the implications of Joffrey perhaps being the one to set it up for Bran to be murdered. And Tyrion, like you last week, is like, I don't get it. Why would he do that? I just don't see the motive here.
Yeah, when we start this chapter and it starts right there, I was just like, oh, well, we didn't really have to drag me kicking and screaming to this realization. He was just going to lay it out at the very beginning of the next chapter.
Yeah. And I didn't, like, I probably could have just let it go, but, and let you, like, find out this chapter, but I had, like, a concern that somebody might be helpful and try and assist you with getting to the point, and I may as well just go ahead and do it, you know?
Gotcha.
People tend to be pretty good about that when it's, like, not something that you're supposed to have figured out, but I think because it seemed like you were, they might step in occasionally.
He's like right back in that headspace of just trying to make this thing that he suspects may have happened, trying to make it make sense. Why would it happen? And he really cannot land on anything except Joffrey is a really cruel individual and would do a thing like this, and also would do it in this way because he is just not quite as clever as some other people, you know. And also he feels like this plan, Joffrey would think that this was a very clever plan.
Yes.
He still can't get to the why of it, and it's nagging at him.
It's an interesting thing because, like, I believe that Tyrion is a smart person, and I believe that the gut instinct he's having here, that if he is so certain he's right, because he really basically, not only does he think he's right, he thinks he showed his hand too much by mouthing off about it to Joffrey, and now Joffrey knows he knows, and that's going to be a problem for him. So I'm willing to go with this, but the thing that I keep sort of getting tripped up on is that, and I think it's 100% about the stealth of it, but the theory that, like, well, he's just a cruel person, well, then he would do it himself because he likes to hurt people, you know? So it doesn't feel like that makes sense as a motive. But do not know what else it could be. So,
And it doesn't seem like Tyrion is really comfortable with that sort of assertion that the motivation is simple cruelty. It's just like the best that he can come up with because he literally can't come up with anything else. But he doesn't seem to be satisfied with, you know, Joffrey did it just because he could and would do such a thing. I really enjoyed, well, enjoy doesn't seem to be the right word, but watching this wedding through Tyrion's eyes as he is just comparing it to his wedding and all the things that were wrong about his wedding is also really, really moving. And I'll admit, I had assumed the Sansa chapter would be basically a rehash of the Tyrion chapter just from her perspective. So I thought we were going to get another blow-by-blow of the wedding. And only we would then have Sansa comparing it to hers and how she felt during all these moments happened. So when we get to her chapter and it's really just her getting the fuck out of Dodge, I was like, oh. I mean, I was happy about it.
Yeah.
But I was so certain that's what we were about to get was like the two different perspectives of the same event. And I'll admit, I am kind of relived because we lived through the horror of that day from Sansa's POV already.
Yeah.
And it didn't necessarily need to do it again. But it didn't occur to me that we would be doing anything but that. So when that didn't happen, I was like, oh, all right, book. Okay.
Yeah, I have such a love-hate relationship with, like, multiple POVs of the same event in books. I have read it done excellently, where I am absolutely gripped because things are, like, so different, even though it's the exact same event. And then there are times where I'm like, you really didn't need to do this. You mm-hmm. did not need to put me through this whole thing again. You
right,
could have
right,
just
right.
figured mm-hmm. out another way. If anybody could pull it off, I believe George R.R. Martin can pull it off. But nevertheless, I don't really want it. I'm good. Thank you.
So, yeah, there's this, the wedding happens. There's a couple of moments with Tyrion is really painful. The exchanging of the cloaks, you know, was difficult for him.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering that, you know, there's even a bit of like resentment in as he's remembering, because he's just like, you could have fucking knelt, Sansa. Like, would it have killed yeah. you to just kneel down a little bit and help me save like a scrap of dignity? And I was like, ugh. You know, like,
it's like, I feel for Tyrion on a personal level, but from where Sansa's standing, Tyrion you know? Murdered all of her entire family, so she yeah. gets to keep her own yeah. petty little victory.
Yeah.
Shut up.
I as much as agreed, as much as I am sympathetic to his position, I am not feeling mad at Sansa about her choice at all.
Yeah.
He's also had too much wine, haven't we all? He also really has to pee, don't we all?
I like that detail a lot. Just like, oh my god, can we fucking get this over with?
Like, he's doing a little dance because he can't stay still. And then there's a scene where they go back. There's like a little in-between time from the ceremony to the feast. And everybody goes to change their clothes. And he, at one point, kind of walks in the room as Shay is helping to change Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
And Shay is like also dressed up, looks very lovely. And she is angling to try to get up in there. Can't she go up to the feast too?
Shay, you dumb
what does
bitch.
She not understand
Would
about
you
being
stop
in hiding?
It? Ugh. Tiresome.
Also, you know, I mean, not that I would recommend this course of action, but it is going to be 8 million fucking people at this wedding feast. You didn't have to ask her or Sansa nothing. You could have just went and mingled in with the crowd and been nosy mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. kept your fucking mouth shut.
Yep. Yeah. This, Shay is just such an interesting, weird character. I really do enjoy the fact that on a reread, because like when I first read it, I was used to much more tropey writing on my first read through of this series, which is part of why The Red Wedding caught me so totally off guard, because I'm not expecting that to happen to the man who is clearly supposed to win the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Shay, I really thought I was supposed to like Shay and think she had a heart of gold in the tropey hooker who's actually super great despite being a sex worker kind of bullshit way. Mm. And I was frustrated by the fact that I didn't like her better. And I thought it was like me just not connecting with her. And then, you know, now I'm realizing, oh, it is supposed to be that Tyrion sees things in her that aren't really there because he has issues with love and women and being desired. And that is clearly, like, even in the dialogue with Varys, who was just like, I gotta admit, I just don't see it for her. What is the deal? I was like surprised that there was that moment, because I had forgotten about it. Mm. And I'm just realizing now, like, oh no, it's supposed to kind of be like, she isn't that great. She's like fun in her way, but Tyrion is really like trying to make a future for her. And as it's weird, because she's like fighting him on some of it. I'm like, this is in your best interest. He's about to do you some like really big solids, getting you a pretty good marriage and stuff, if you would just be chill. But here you are trying to make yourself show up at the royal wedding. And for why? Like, just mm-hmm. to see, you want to see the pie get cut open with pigeons inside? Really? Yeah. That's worth it to you?
I love to. And I don't know if this is intentional, but Shay asked permission to come as a server right after Tyrion has told Sansa that she's going to be the most beautiful woman in the hall.
Mm.
And then Shay is like, couldn't I come serve at the table? I want to see pigeons fly out of the pie.
That did not occur to me, but you are right. I wonder, interesting. Yeah, maybe maybe Shay is just like, I'm really glad that Sansa isn't fucking him because he might just not have any use for me anymore.
Yeah, I
trying to keep his interests alive and fiery.
Right. And yeah, we talked about it last time, but yeah, Tyrion is just like, he is in love with, like I said, that he is in love with Shay, and I think it's true, but I think it's more accurate to say he's in love with a version of Shay that he may have created. Which doesn't mean that the love is any less real, because when you fall for somebody, you know, you fall for them. Oftentimes we do the same things. You know, we fall for the version of the person we think we know, or the version of the person they decide to show us, you know? So I'm not, this is not shade to Tyrion, like, oh, guilty, you idiot, you know? Happens to the fucking best of us. But yeah, he just is, when he looks at her, he sees something entirely different than what everyone else sees. I will admit, I am not 100% sure if there is any malice behind Shay and the version. I think that that is just who she is. And it's like buying her trade, right? This is what she does.
She's a survivor.
Littering. You know, this is, yeah, this is how she has saved her own life multiple times. So, you know, I don't even think it's anything like, oh, you know, that shady bitch, you can't trust her. I mean, maybe a little bit, but not in a sort of like, you know, she's out to get him kind of thing. This is just how she moves through the world.
Yeah, and it serves her. I don't think it's at all a malicious thing. I think it's just she's going to do what she's got to do. Mm. And, you know, that can look malicious because it seems like, well, you just don't care about other people. Well, no, I don't. I have to get by. And she's been dealt a pretty rough hand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I can't really fault her for it. But it's frustrating when it feels like you want to survive and he's trying to help you do that. You know, and you just seem to not. She's like, I think, kind of single-minded in the idea of, like, as long as I keep his attention, then I will survive. And it's like he's just figuring out an alternate way, and you're still too focused on the original plan to see that maybe it's time to adjust and do something a little bit, like,
yeah,
a little bit more long-termy.
Exactly to what I was going to say. Not long-termy, but I was going to say long-term.
What do you mean? I felt like that was very I was going to say the word for, you know, being well spoken, and then I forgot it, which I feel like is a representation of overall what just happened. So I'm just gonna leave that there. I had that happen the other day too. I don't know what my deal is, but I cannot remember that word to save my life. Articulate. Fucking Christ. Every now and then, I really wonder at myself. I've made a living? How?
It has been really difficult with words as of late. I always have trouble with them, but lately, it has not been a fair fight. Mm-mm. I really have been at a great disadvantage finding whatever words I need in any given moment. This shit is just like
struggle.
It just, it like oozes out of my ear when I sleep at night is the only thing I can come up with. Because I know the words. But
I was recording One Piece the other day, and it was like there was a live chat with people there. And I was trying to remember this word. And I was like, you know, when there's like a particular thing that's wrong with you. And I was like, Achilles heel. And somebody chimed in with flaw. And I said, you know, I just want to say that I find it really insulting that you thought the word that I couldn't remember was flaw. But I also want to say that is the word I was looking for. And I'm insulted at the fact that I could not remember it. So I guess it's all just going to wash out. Truly. It's so pitiful. Oh,
God. We're all just trying to live in a world with overpriced eggs. I don't know what else they want from us. Listen, this is what you're going to get, y'all.
That is going to be, every time I fuck something up, I'm just going to yell, have you seen the price of eggs, out of context. And that is just going to be my defense forever from now on. I'm sorry. Have you seen the price of eggs? Yeah, I couldn't remember the word.
Oh, God. All right. That's actually really fucking funny. Sorry,
everybody.
I can't wait to yell it.
I'm going to do it on the podcast, and I'm not going to give any context. I'm just going to say, go listen to the song of Ice and Fire. Figure it out.
Okay, so they're heading back to the feast now. Everybody has changed, and they bump into the lady, Olenna. And this, you guys, this her fussing around with this hairnet to get out this poison. It goes on for so long. As I was reading it, I was just like, what the fuck? This is taking way too long. What is she doing? Fucking just get it and go. What are you doing?
I love this so much. Like, and when you're first reading it and you don't know the plan, you don't think anything of this at all. And then on the reread, when you know what's going on, you're like, bitch, this is so obvious. It's not obvious because nobody would fucking think the hairnet is anything. But it really is like stressful. Yes. Agree.
It really was. And when that's the other bit too, is when I thought the Sansa chapter would just be a re-going over of the Tyrion chapter, I thought we were going to get a very pointed moment of her putting on, like styling her hair and putting on the hairnet and all that. And then maybe like, you know, her wondering about who knows what, so that we can make the connection as the reader.
Yeah.
But that ends up not really being necessary whatsoever. And what they ended up doing instead is have Sansa realize that a piece is missing and then putting everything together herself. So yeah, I appreciated that. But this whole bit with her like struggling to get this little piece of jewelry out of her hairnet, I just could not take it. And she also offers Sansa, you know, invites her to come visit at Highgarden. And it's making conversation while she's doing this.
Right.
But also, I choose to believe it's a real invitation. I want Lady Olenna to want Sansa to be somewhere that's not miserable and terrible and to have some joy in her life. That's probably just me and fan fiction in my own brain. I just need for somebody out there to fucking like really want to see Sansa get a goddamn break, you know?
I think there is some of that in there. I think it's, you know, the fact that they give a shit enough about Margaery to be like, oh, no,
Sansa?
The Tyrells. Because they're killing Joffrey to keep Margaery from having to be married to a monster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's a lot of houses that wouldn't care. They would just be like, do your duty, shut the fuck up, and deal with it.
Absolutely.
And the Tyrells are like, yeah, no. we'll go through the whole thing, and then we will make sure you don't have to put up with that shit. Yeah. So I feel like they do care probably about Sansa to a degree. They're not going to like put themselves out for her in a way that will be detrimental to them in a great way.
Right.
But they are going to do their best if they can, you know? Yeah. That's how I see them, though. I don't know.
I like to think that. Because it's weird too. Because we might as well just keep moving ahead. When this happens and Joffrey is murdered and Cersei accuses Tyrion and Sansa, basically by extension, I am curious. And you know what I wanted to ask you about. And again, getting ahead, is the whole pie poisoned? Because Joffrey eats a piece of Tyrion's pie. And I was confusion.
Yeah. I don't think it's in the pie.
Okay. All right. So I was thinking maybe it's in the wine. But then Margaery was drinking the wine too, so that doesn't make sense. So I guess it doesn't really matter how it got to him, right?
I don't remember if we get absolute, like, information on where it was, but I don't think it would have been in the pie. Because he's eating Tyrion's pie, which would imply that they were fine with also killing Tyrion.
Well, that's why I was confused. I was like, wait a minute. What, you know, he's eating Tyrion's pie, and now he's choking and he's dying. But clearly the poison was delivered at some point before that happens, and it just happened to go down while he was at Tyrion's place.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what happens with this accusation against Tyrion, because I want to hear what Cersei, I guess, thinks happened. Like, when does she think he did this? How does she think he did this? They were sitting way away from him. He wasn't, like, Tyrion was nowhere near Joffrey's food or his drink or anything. He would not have even been in proximity to Joffrey, except Joffrey kept fucking coming over.
Yep.
So if Tyrion's plan was to somehow, like how was that his plan? So I can't wait to get to that part and hear what the charges are and how they think he fucking did this, because he was not anywhere near the action. The action just kept coming over to him, which is how I feel about my life a lot of times. Like, I be trying to stay out of the action, but I look up and there it is.
Joke, man. Yeah, that is too true. Too true, ma'am. So, okay, we have the end of the ceremony. There's a lot about the order in which everybody walks out, and I'm just like, yeah, we get it, you know who people are, thank you, George. And he is in the carriage with Sansa and trying to, like, make her happy, and offers to bring her to Casterly Rock to visit, and she has absolutely no interest and just says, I'll go wherever you say to go. And he's like, I was hoping it would please you. And she says, it pleases me to please you, which is just, you know, complete cop-out answer. And he gets very frustrated at this, which, like, I understand, but also just, Tyrion, have a little bit of fucking empathy for the situation she's in. Like, what do you want from her, dude?
Yeah.
Honestly, you gotta come to terms, sir, with the fact that she sees you as an enemy. And that's just... she's been traumatized. She doesn't trust anybody anymore, except for the people that are going to help her tonight. And those people turn out to be also lying and unreliable. So, yeah. It's just frustrating, because I understand him being irritated with her, but, like, what she's been through.
And he keeps going, swinging back and forth, right? Even in his own, like, in his head, he'll be annoyed and then be like, well, of course she feels this way. Or, of course, like, who can blame her for feeling that way? Mm-hmm. And then he'll like, do some sort of reaching out to her in some capacity, and she won't respond in kind. And then he'll swing back to being annoyed again. And I am at the point now, I guess, especially now that she's gotten out of this marriage and out of King's Landing and all that, I think that this compassion that Tyrion has for Sansa is appreciated. You know, it's one of the things that continues to make him, like, so much more human than some of the other Lannisters, who are, like, kind of cartoonish so far, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, I find it really, like, selfish that Tyrion is, like, ego is so bruised by Sansa's, like, her distance and her coldness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago, where it feels like he wants her to acknowledge that he is different than his family. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she does not make that distinction really fucking needles at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like it's almost an undercurrent to everything, you know. And so, and whenever she does that, whenever she treats him just like she would treat every fucking body else, he gets a little, like, insulted. And, but then a minute later, he'll be like, well, but I understand why, because, you know, we literally killed her whole family. So you just,
I don't know why, but you just saying it like that sounds so like, but he doesn't really get it, actually. And, you know, I definitely understand the phenomenon of understanding something and still being salty about it. Mm-hmm. I get how that works. But it feels like even when he is telling himself, it makes sense and I understand, he doesn't really. Mm-mm. He's just saying he should understand. But Tyrion doesn't seem to really, like, internalize the reality of what it has been like for her.
Tyrion is a lot of my, like, white TM friends over the years.
Uh-oh.
Who are, like, constantly assuring me that they understand and that they're different. But then turn out not to be so different after all.
Oh, shit.
And, like, the, you know, like... Like every, you know, I don't engage in this sort of behavior anymore on the internet because I can't do it. But, you know, if I would share really, you know, call out posts, you know, talking about white supremacy and privilege and fragility and all that stuff, mm-hmm. I would have people would like jump to the comments to make sure to remind me that I understood that they were not like those other people. TM. Uh-huh. You know, that's kind of the energy that Tyrion is bringing here. And meanwhile, Sansa is just looking at all of them like, I can't, y'all didn't say to me, is mm-hmm. I don't know what you want from yep. me, but you know, and so it just feels a little bit like that.
And honestly, to a degree, even if he is different from the rest of his family, what good does that do her?
How is it helping?
Yeah, if he's at the whim of whatever Tywin and eventually Joffrey are going to decide anyway. So that doesn't really help her situation except at the most basic personal level, which is the fact that he doesn't beat her and rape her.
Yep.
But otherwise, it's not offering any material benefit. So
nope.
She doesn't need, she doesn't owe you gratefulness. Sir, you know?
Excuse me. Yeah,
it's just that just breaks down to the sort of white people thing as well. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. So you're not like the worst type of person. What good does that do me? In a great sense. Like the mm-hmm. grand sense of the miscarriages of justice in the world. Go do something then. Because he's not stopping things from happening because he isn't really of consequence within his own family and he doesn't have the power to do
doesn't have the power right now, like, you know, it as much as he might have good intentions to keep her safe, to your point, the only thing he can keep Sansa safe from is himself. That's the only power he has. If anybody else wanted to come swing in and like say Joffrey lives, right,
mm-hmm.
and he sends whoever his fucking henchman is these days down to get Sansa out of her bedchambers, can Tyrion be like, no, you're not? Can he protect her from that? You know,
he couldn't.
you know what I mean? So
yes.
I understand Tyrion like means well when he talks about like wanting to keep her safe, but literally all he can do is control how he treats her. He can't like keep her safe from anyone else. Can't from Cersei, from Tywin, from Joffrey. So yeah, he's just going to have to understand that she is never going to look at him like anything other than just another fucking Lannister. And he needs to, like, accept that shit.
Yeah, agreed. Hard, hard agree.
So also, Sansa is, when we get to the wedding feast, I just want to just say, because we have talked so much about her and been kind of like, well, I have been like kind of throwing shade at her, especially in the earlier books. But mm-hmm. man, does she know how to work a crowd. She knows exactly how to perform this role, you know?
Yep.
She's fucking hitting all the right notes with all the right people. And even Tyrion is like, well, goddamn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that moment. Him being like, man, if she were queen, she would knock that shit out of the park, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the sort of thing that I wish got a little bit more attention. I mean, she hasn't been given the opportunity that much, but most of the time when Sansa uses her courtesy, it feels very feeble in the moment because there's big shit happening.
Yeah,
and she can only be like, thank you for your mm-hmm. courtesy, your mm-hmm. kindness, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, like, I have mentioned my feeling that Sansa would not have survived in Arya's situation, and Arya would certainly not have survived in Sansa's situation. I want to see more of, like, Sansa being good at things.
Yeah, yeah.
She just hasn't been given a chance. Not, everything has been happening to her.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I really am. I'm glad that you bring that up, that the difference between what it takes to survive in Sansa's situation and how not everybody would have been able to survive it. And I also love that because in a weird way, the tools that women are often given to navigate the world are very circumstance specific, you know?
Yes. And often really passive.
Very passive, and they look empty and meaningless outside of the very specific set of circumstances where you can apply them. You know, everywhere mm-hmm. else, it looks like, what have you been doing your whole life? You learned no valuable skills, right? Like, you just wasted it your entire youth. Nobody ever taught you anything. But you plant her in the type of circumstance and situation that she was raised for, and she is fucking, like, just, you know, whatever a sports analogy is. Batting 1,000, is that a thing? I don't know. But she's doing really well. I feel like I've heard people say that.
A couple of people sound like I've just kind of fallen over with their hand clutched to their chest.
I'm pretty sure people say batting 1,000. I think I've heard that on the news.
Okay. I mean, what do I know? I believe you. Sure, they've said
watch
it.
Watch it be like so wildly wrong.
Right. You could say anything to me that is a sport saying, and I'd just be like, is that okay? Sure, sounds like any other sports thing.
What is that joke? I can't remember even what context I heard it, but it was some kind of some silly joke about people misunderstanding or misspeaking sports things, and somebody was like, he hit a touchdown. And that just made me laugh so hard because I was like, yes, he hit a touchdown. That sounds like something that I would say in all seriousness.
It's as far as I can tell, there's very little difference. You get to go a long way when you do it, right? And it wins things, right? It's like good.
I think it's genuinely considered a good thing, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you put Sansa in the role that she was born and bred to do, and she fucking is kicking so much ass at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a specific skill set that every other time she's been in danger, it like hasn't really served her.
Yeah.
It served to keep her alive.
I was about to say, yeah, it actually has served her, but it's been so bare minimum, it doesn't feel like it's doing anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's keeping her alive, but it's not, like, gaining her anything. You know, we don't see her making, like, any strides forward, you know, or getting better. Or, you know what, maybe that's not fair, too. Maybe just she's getting better, but it's for Sansa, the best thing she has going for her is how passive she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's keeping her alive. But it's not anything that's like fun to watch. You know?
No.
It doesn't make for great storytelling. It doesn't make her like a character that you're like, oh, what is she up to this week? You know?
Yeah.
But quietly, it's why she's still alive.
Yeah.
So I like that she gets this moment where Tyrion is just like, fuck, she's just she is killing this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And, you know, I've talked about this before, about, like, the way that we really appreciate women performing masculinity, and we do not appreciate women who are performing femininity mm-hmm. in a way that is, like, distinctive and taught, and it's very rooted in misogyny and what we find valuable. And, I am curious if anybody out there has watched The Woman King. I haven't seen it yet, but I had somebody that I'm friends with who saw it, and they felt like that movie fell into this trap of only if you are like a warrior are you a valuable woman. And if you do things that are more like not even necessarily passive, but more politic, then that is not seen as valuable. But it's something that I just really like. This is sort of the joke about like powerful women characters, and those powerful women characters so often are just like, oh, I'm super hot and also sword fight, you know? Mm-hmm. And we just don't really appreciate people who are good at this part of things, right? Because it feels false. And like, you're putting on a show and you're masking and saying what needs, what like is best for each person. And there's a level of dishonesty necessary to that. You mm-hmm. know, Sansa's being like generous and kind verbally to people that she doesn't really like or care about very much. Mm-hmm. I get that, but like, there's also, there's need for that. That's part of the game. She's playing the game.
Like, I would, like, when you talk about the fact that you used the word, like, to politic, and that made me think, one of the things, like, a woman character in this series that we all, well, I feel like we all just absolutely were here for at every turn, is Lady Olenna.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, it's like what Sansa could be if she gets older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she plays the game as well. She has to have had a lifetime of doing exactly what we see Sansa doing, except that now she's older and is in a position of power that she can be more honest than Sansa can be.
Yes.
You know, she can tell people, I'm not in the mood for your bullshit, or that hat looks stupid, or you know, whatever other things she wants to say to people, you know.
I hope they play the Reigns of Castamere again. It's been almost an hour. I've forgotten how it goes.
You know, but she is an example of a woman who, you know, maneuvers and plays this game that Peter ends up telling Sansa is literally called the Game of Thrones.
He literally says it, guys.
But, you know, so when we see Lady Olenna making these moves, we're all just like, oh, you know, boss bitch, that's right, that's how you do that shit, you know what I mean? In a mm-hmm. way that we aren't supportive of Sansa making these moves, because Sansa is so young that she has to be demure in a way that Lady Olenna doesn't have to be, you know? And
she's not in any position of power. She's from the Tyrell family.
Exactly.
They can basically do whatever the fuck they feel like. And what is anybody going to say? Because they run all the food.
Right. So Lady Olenna is an example of a character of a woman that has great power and is making moves throughout the world without doing what you are talking about, which is performing a certain type of masculinity. Mm-hmm. And we're all still here for it, you know? Mm-hmm. But that's because she's positioned so much differently than Sansa is positioned.
Yes.
You know? So she can still perform femininity, but also like be a force to be reckoned with. And I think she's a good example of when you can do that, you know? And it's just unfortunate that Sansa is not in that same position of power. So she can't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, all right, we go to the actual wedding and him getting Pod being like, I laid out your new doublet, not here, on your bed, in the bed chamber. Yes, that's where we keep the bed. And this is when we have the whole thing with Shay and him seeing Sansa and talking to everybody, and they're good at this. And then they go into the throne room. Fucking Joffrey and Margaery ride in on white chargers with pages before them scattering rose petals. I keep
forgetting how big this throne room is.
Yeah.
Like, every time it's mentioned that somebody rides in on a fucking horse, I'm like, word? Really?
Mm-hmm.
In that little-ass room? But it's not a little-ass room.
Nope. Indeed not.
And so, yeah, there's the feast goes on forever. There's a lot of songs. Y'all know how I feel about the songs.
I swear to God.
There's like, there's a song about Renly to honor Margaery, which I thought that they would be like, no, you can't play no songs to Renly because he was a fucking traitor. And, you know,
he rode in and was on their side for the Blackwater. He's cool.
So now he's a hero. And there's a song for Joffrey, which is what? The Reigns of Castamere, I guess.
I don't even remember all of them.
But then there's another guy who's singing a long-ass song that's going to have 77 verses.
I swear to God.
And I have never been happier for Joffrey to just jump up and start yelling some shit. I was like, thank God. Like, I hate you, dude, but also thank God.
Yeah, it's a really, like, this is something I think about all the time, is the concept of living in a world before recorded music and what that was like. And
no, it just sounds terrible.
There are so many Poirot episodes I watch where he's like on holiday somewhere and they have a piano and a fellow passenger on the ship is like, oh, I'll sing for you all. Mm-hmm. And that's their entertainment for the evening, is some random who like decides they are going to be the entertainment. Mm-hmm. Whether they're like adequate or not isn't even a factor. It's
nobody
just,
is they vetting volunteer these people. Themselves
and you don't get to like say get the fuck off the stage because they're also a passenger and they're a person you're gonna have to deal with, and probably like tomorrow night they're gonna do the same thing.
It's basically for a millennia it was all just karaoke.
Yep.
Like just anybody could step on stage and start belting something out, and that was it. That's what you had for entertainment.
It just sounds like a torment to me. I already get embarrassed watching people sing to begin with.
My God, you fucking sound like Jerry Seinfeld.
I don't like it. That's because I love to sing and perform, but I can't handle it with other people.
That is a direct quote.
It is embarrassing.
I can't watch a guy sing. That's embarrassing. Gets all emotional. Nah, I'll pass.
This is how I feel like. There's such a thing with like women who are attracted to men who sing because I guess of the like emotion. A man once wrote a song for me and recorded himself playing it on his guitar and sent it to me, and I wanted to curl up and die. I wanted to die. I really like, I didn't even listen to the whole thing. I listened to like I think I got through about 40 seconds and I had to tap out, and then was just like, oh my God, so sweet. Thank you. And just never shall we speak of this again. But didn't say that part. It was just in my heart. Yeah. So this is just fucking torment to me. Just no, all around. So all of these fucking courses, the amount of food. I'll tell you what, too. I was reading this before I had eaten breakfast, and I was starting to be like, I'm going to die. Somebody feed me immediately. It's critical. But he is noticing that Sansa really isn't eating. And, now we are aware that she was probably anxious as hell because she knew what was about to happen. That she was she didn't know Joffrey was going to die.
Right,
but she knew that she was going to have to bail at a certain point and was obviously just kind of freaking out internally. And he's watching her because he doesn't understand why she's so like kind of away inside her head. And he almost thinks that she's jealous of Marjorie. Yeah.
For a second, he's like, God, does she want to be up there instead?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, fucking, she should know better, right? That can't be it.
Yeah.
But then he gets distracted about thinking of her and what she may want, and starts noticing like where everybody is, and gets an eye full of Illyria and fucking Oberyn.
Come back to your mic.
Making out. And he's just like, I wonder what would happen if I leaned over and kissed Sansa right now. And just like, oh, she'd probably flinch away. Or be brave and suffer through it. He doesn't want either one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, what do you want? I don't even know what you want, sir.
He wants her to be in love with him.
Well, that's not going to happen, sir.
It sure ain't. It sure ain't. Like, look, Tyrion, I would love that, too. I would love her to be actually happy. And for you to find somebody to love you. But sir, you're going to have to get over that. There's also kind of a touching moment where he sees this couple who are very in love and she's pregnant, and he keeps like, they keep kissing at all these different moments, and they notice how, and he's like putting his hand on her belly in this very protective sort of gesture. And there's just something about the description of that scene that was very simple and felt really moving to me. Mm-hmm. I was genuinely like, oh, that's cute. You know, it's just not something that I want ever because babies, but yeah. I understand the overall vibe here.
Yeah. It's a kind of like a longing for what if he was able to live a life that was apart from all of this fucking backstabbing and, you know, palace intrigue and being part of a family that hates you, you know?
Yep.
What if I could just have a little family of my own somewhere, you know, separate from all of this madness? But I'm afraid that is not in the cards for you, my friend.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed.
So, yeah, there's lots of songs. Mm-hmm. There is some shenanigans with Moon Boy is here.
Where do you keep going?
Oh, sorry. Leaning over to my like, book.
You have the waveform. You like if you look at it. You are so gone.
So yeah, then there's entertainment. There's gestures and I don't know. It looks like some acrobatics, maybe. Some things are going on there.
I mean, you name it, they got it. They've got fire eaters, and they've got dancing bears, and they've got tumblers, and ladies with, like, what do you call it? Don't they have, like, basically, like, ribbon dancing? Something like that? So I just kept thinking of, like, praise dancing. I was like, that's not right.
Oh, God. So yeah, so then at one point he actually just straight up asked Sansa, you know, when he realized she's not eating, he asked her what's wrong. Wait. First he says,
"Not a miss." And he's like, "Oh my god, I can't believe I even fucking asked that question. What a goon!"
And then she's immediately like, "No, everything is fine," because of course. And then there's like more talk of entertainment and everything, and then. I think this is when things start to get a little weird, right?
Yeah.
When Joffrey is noticeably drunk, and even Tyrion is like, shit, he's drunker than I am. And that is fucking hard to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens first?
There's a singer that comes in and starts singing about the Blackwater, but he's like really obviously being like, oh, it was Joffrey, the brave boy with the golden hair and his, like, valiant mother. And Tyrion is just sitting over to the side being like, the fuck it was. And then guzzling wine all surly.
Even Sansa yells out.
She's like, she didn't do that about Cersei. But Sir Garland says something in his defense and is like, yeah, this dude here, we would be dead if it weren't for him. That would be over. He was like the one that, especially with the wildlings added into the mix, we just were able to have this huge leg up. And Tyrion is genuinely like grateful.
Yeah. I think this might be the first thing anyone has ever said publicly.
Agreed.
You know, about like, hey, you want to give Tyrion like a little nod or something about how we all didn't die that night.
Yep.
And it is just like Tyrion is this absurdly grateful is how it's written.
Yes. Yeah, I do like that. It's such a frustrating thing because with a monarchy, you're not allowed to like a person the king doesn't like.
Yeah.
You know? So like you can't give him a compliment because if Joffrey finds out that you were complimentary, then God knows what the fuck, you know? So you've got to follow the lead of the bully. It's the only way.
Yeah. And that is so apparent when the shenanigans start later on. He starts like taking shots at Tyrion and everybody is just laughing it up, you know, because what else are they going to do? What was that line, when the king laughs, everybody laughs or whatever?
When the king laughs, the court laughs with him.
It's just like, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's funny. Or it definitely doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. You just, he said it, he laughed, so now you're fucking laughing too. What a scary way to live. And I don't even think we're that far. We're not that removed from it. As much as we like to think we are, we really aren't that far removed from this same sort of fucking behavior.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So this is when the fucking, the jousters arrive.
Indeed. Here they come.
Yes.
We wind up finding out a little bit later that this was Littlefinger's idea, but he had to, like, plant it in Joff's head with a friggin' backhoe.
Yeah, he really did, because, like, subtlety was not working. He really had to, like, just climb all up in there and make some room for this idea in order for it to stick. Joffrey is like, why? I don't even like them. I don't even like doors. Why would I want them at my wedding?
Come on, man.
Littlefinger's like, well, you know who likes it even less?
Sir, fucking catch up.
But
this kid is so dumb.
Tyrion is like, you know what? It's not their fault. I am going to reward them with a handsome, you know, bag of silver or whatever the fuck when this is done. Because there's no reason for me to be angry at them.
Yes.
And this mockery goes on for a little bit. It all, like, falls apart at some point. Like, they fall off of there. One's riding a dog. One's riding a pig.
They're humping each other.
Yeah, it's like a real fucking mess. They get back.
It's a very lowbrow situation.
They end back up, but on each other's steed, carrying each other's like shield and shit. It's all disarray.
Facing backwards.
And Joffrey is laughing so fucking hard that there's like wine coming out of his nose.
I swear, I hate this kid so much. I'm so glad he's dead.
And then he tries to insist that Tyrion needs to go and fight the victor of this little joust.
Yep.
And Tyrion decides to handle this by playing into it. You know, I will ride the pig, but only if you ride the dog. Well.
Well, why me? Why, you're the only man in the hall that I'm certain of defeating. He could not have said which was sweeter. The instant of shocked silence, the gale of laughter that followed, or the look of blind rage on his nephew's face. And I have to say, the fact that he got a laugh from the crowd
is
honestly shocking to me. Because I really would have thought nobody would laugh.
I would have thought that they would have all waited to see Joffrey's reaction and then followed suit. But I guess people have been drinking. People aren't really paying attention now. Everybody's,
That's a good point. I didn't really think about, like, everybody's fucking wasted.
Yeah, everybody is trash. So, yeah, they're just like, oh, you know, he got you. And they all, like if they were sober, no. Nobody is laughing until fucking Joffrey decides if that shit's funny. But everybody is all fucked up. So anything is going. And then he gets warned by the same guy that was complimenting him, the same Garland, the Sir Garland. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, hey, fucking heads up. And here comes Joffrey, you know, lurching towards Tyrion, carrying this fucking giant, ridiculous chalice that What's-His-Face gave him as his, like, fucking wedding present.
Mm-hmm.
And just dumps the whole thing over Tyrion's head. And then yells, you know, how do you like that, imp?
I swear, it's such a pitiful retort.
It is.
It's like, he got you because you were putting him on the spot and he got the best of you. And so your solution to, like, getting your own back is to just pour wine on his head and be like, so there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sir, like, come on. Yeah. That is and just then, so sad.
It's like he's outclassed, he's outmatched, he's outwit, you know.
Completely.
So one more time, Sir Garland, in a clutch, is just like to Joffrey, that was ill done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is this Sir Garland guy? I should be paying closer attention to him. But that's a side note. So then Tyrion really handles this very gracefully. He decides that, like, I gotta calm this down. This is getting really ugly. Like, so he just spins it. He says something about Joffrey spilling it. Like, you know, he was trying to offer me a drink. And then it was spilled. And instead of Joffrey being like, yeah, that's what happened. No, it didn't spill. I wasn't serving you. Like, let him help you.
He is such a fucking infant.
So Marjorie comes over and, you know, gets him so that I come back over. You know, let's get away from all this. Go back to where we're seated. And you think it's going to be okay. You know, you think, okay, Joffrey is going to sit down and fucking enjoy his wedding feast and drink his wine. And everybody is going to, like, be all right for a minute.
Sure isn't. He says, because Marjorie says, Sir Adam wants to make a toast. I don't have any wine. How can I drink a toast if I have no wine? And then you'll serve me. Since you won't joust, you'll be my cupbearer. I would be most honored. It's not meant to be an honor.
Once again.
I fucking cannot.
He is driving this little boy out of his mind by agreeing with him and refusing to be insulted, or refusing to admit to being insulted, you know?
Yep.
He is just not going to rise to Joffrey's taunts. And it's honestly one of the most efficient ways to deal with a bully before it becomes physical, you know? This is a very good tactic, and it would be a tactic that Tyrion, I think, is well versed in, because I'm sure his whole life has been nothing but dealing with bullies, right? So it's not surprising to me at all that Tyrion is able to handle this outburst of Joffrey, and it's not surprising at all. Joffrey's reaction should not have been surprising to me, but I had to remind myself again that everybody is drunk, because just how poorly Joffrey handles this.
Very, very much so.
I was like, God damn, is he really that bad? But yes, he is that bad, y'all.
Talk about like playing the game. He has no idea there's a game at all. Yeah. It's not even on his radar. He's just like, well, I'm the king and I get what I want all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And is genuinely like seeming to be puzzled when he doesn't.
Yeah, like with the whole chalice thing, he like kicks it onto the floor and makes Tyrion go pick it up. But then when he bends down, kicks it like further away because he needs to see Tyrion crawling around on the floor to like suddenly feel a little bit better. Like, okay, I finally got him where he belongs, like down on the floor. and once that happens, then he tells Tyrion. Once Tyrion gives him the cup back, he's like, okay, now you can get up. And now he finally feels like I'm back in charge. Mm-hmm. I showed Tyrion, right? I showed him. You really didn't, but I guess. And this is when it's time for pie.
I don't know why the way you said that sounded so sinister. And I know that it's because this is when he gets, but it's like, it's not the pie. And the way it feels like that's going to lodge itself in my brain. Like every time I eat pie for the rest of my life, I'm going to hear you saying very sinisterly, it's time for pie. And I'm going to be like, oh my God.
So yeah, they got this giant fucking pigeon pie, which I guess, and they have to chop into it with a fucking sword to free the birds. And at first he's going to use his new one, and then Marjorie is like, that is not appropriate. So they use Sir Ilyn's sword, which I think is even less appropriate. But...
okay, right. Thank you. I thought the same thing. I mean, and the point is, like, his is Valyrian steel and Sir Ilyn's is not. So I guess it's like you're being disrespectful of the material it's made of, really, instead of, like, the office of the person using it. But, like, nevertheless, being like, oh, yeah, the official headsman should come over here and cut my pigeon pie open. Like, what?
Or the day of my wedding.
Okay.
But it turns out that Sansa seeing the sword is, and I will admit freely, so she sees it and she's just like, she hasn't said hardly two words all day outside of like talking to other like noble people, like socializing. She says, what sword is that?
Yeah.
And she wants to know, like, desperately, like, what did he do with my father's sword? And Tyrion feels like guilty. He's just like, I should have sent ice to Robb Stark.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, that is Ned's sword that Sir Ilan has?
No.
Or he ice had it.
Ice was melted down to make.
Oh, that's right.
The Valyrian steel sword.
So this is her understanding that her father's sword has been destroyed, or at least asking. Like,
I'm
where
not sure
is it?
She gets that's what has happened.
But she realizes that it's gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. This is just like the last thing of his that she had. And it wasn't even she had it, but
it was around. It still existed, mm-hmm. you know, which it doesn't anymore. He does not answer her.
Nope.
Just ignores that question altogether.
Coward.
Yeah, a little bit. And then ask her that they should go out for some fresh air. And this is when Joffrey comes back over to antagonize them further. Yeah.
Joffrey, just take the L.
Nope, can't. Comes can't. Over. I think he even has Margaery with him. And he's just like, no. My uncle hasn't eaten his pie yet. Grabs a handful of the pie off of Tyrion's plate, which is just fucking rude and gross.
Yep.
He's already coughing. Well, he puts the one piece in his mouth, and then he just starts coughing immediately, but keeps eating. And then he starts to die.
I just want to say, I really enjoy the cough being like K-O-F.
I did not care for that.
I like it. It's like the onomatopoeia of it instead of just being like he began coughing. And I will say, I give Roy Dotrice a lot of shit. Very, very richly deserved, in my opinion, for his like voices and whatnot. His performance of Joffrey's death is outstanding.
Oh,
I
is that right?
Swear to God, it sounded like I was hearing a man choke to death. It really did. I was like thinking, I hope he got this shit in one take, because if they mm-hmm. had to re-record this any number of times, his throat must have been absolutely raw. Mm-hmm. He really went for it, and I was totally engrossed and just like, wow, okay, yes. He hits it sometimes, and makes me so mad that he's so off other times. I know you've got it in you. Where is it? Anyway.
that's interesting. I am, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go back and listen to it myself, but.
No, it's not like, you know, that.
But that's good to hear. So, yeah, the first people in the scene are Margaery and her grandmother. They're both right there. They are both shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Shocked. Help your king, you dolts. Give him some water.
It really is the performance of the century. So now they're all, like, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, trying to save him. Tyrion is watching in disbelief. Like, he's going to die. Oh, my God. He's going to die. And then as he looks at him and has this moment of being like, he has Jaime's eyes.
Yeah.
And then, moment, huh? Yeah. And then he's like, and he's only 13 as he's dying. And then Tyrion is like, is he begging for my forgiveness? Does he think that I could save him? Which, no. I don't think any of that's happening.
Agreed.
So there's this chaos everywhere. Margaery is, you know, sobbing. Tyrion is thinking about Robb Stark and being like, well, after his wedding and this fucking wedding, my wedding wasn't that bad, was it?
Oh, God. That shouldn't be funny, but that was funny.
He picks up the wedding chalice and considers for a second to drink it and then pours it on the floor.
Which, sir, he's just been poisoned. Why would you drink out of anything he has been near?
I don't know. Like, I'm glad that he reconsidered it. Also, yeah. But then he pours it out, and I was like, I wonder, like, why did he pour it out? Is he suspicious that the wine was poisoned, and he is getting rid of evidence, because even though he's not a part of this plan, he wants the whoever did it to get away with it. So he's like secretly abetting them.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's that deep or not, but the fact that he decides to pour it out, you know, where afterwards you would think maybe, I don't know what the CSI situation is in King's Landing. I don't know if they could test the wine and figure, you know what I mean? I don't know, but
yep.
But the fact that he doesn't just set it down, but that he pours it on the floor. So that shit is gone. That's that for that evidence. Yep. That's done. And Cersei screams. He realizes that means, you know, that it's done. It happened. And he thinks, I should leave. And I was like, yes, you should leave.
Mm-hmm.
But he ends up going right to his sister in like as if to comfort her. Like this instinct. An
inexplicable moment of incredibly poor judgment. He thinks that's going to be welcome.
Yep.
Right now.
Yep. And it does not go that way. She has to be forcefully taken away from the body of Joffrey. She is in hysterics, and somebody is yelling that he choked on the pie. Everybody saw it. He choked on the pie because they're trying to console Margaery because this is the second dead husband. And then you hear Cersei yelling that he didn't choke. He was poisoned, and she sicks the Kingsguard on to Tyrion. Arrest my brother. And his fucking wife, she doesn't say that, but that's the energy she was given.
Very much so.
And says that they killed my son. You need to take them both. So even if Tyrion had started to walk out the door at this moment, he wasn't going to get very far.
No. You know?
But I still would have preferred it. You know, like, I get the instinct to want to go comfort your sister. Family is a weird fucking thing, y'all. You know? And even when the person has no right to expect anything from us that's decent, sometimes we will feel compelled to offer decency anyway, you know, and that's what I think happened here. You know, everything in his brain, he knows Cersei doesn't want him comforting her. She doesn't want to be anywhere near him. She loathes him. But when you hear that kind of pain come out from someone, you know, you've known all your life, your sister, that reflex is hard to turn off.
Yeah.
And also he's drunk too.
That's true. Yeah, I gotta factor that into everything,
you know. So, you know, the smart thing would have been to leave, even though I don't think he would have gotten very far. It's not like I think he would have escaped away, you know. He's, how fast can he move? They would have been on him in a second. But at least it wouldn't have been as insulting as being arrested as you're attempting to comfort someone, you know. That has a special sting to it, and I feel like he could have at least spared himself that.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, you dump the wine and then you leave, it really looks like you're guilty. Mm. But it doesn't matter if it looks like he's guilty, because nobody, like, this isn't about a fucking, like, trial with witnesses. Yeah. This is his sister who just despises him and has always thought the worst of him, believing instantly that he must be responsible with zero evidence. And that's just, regardless of how he chose to handle the situation, it would have been the same.
Yeah.
So then we go to Sansa, and she left before he was actually dead. But she's like fleeing the room sobbing, and Lady Tanda tells her she has a good heart. Not every maid would weep so for a man who set her aside and led her to a dwarf. And Sansa is just like, oh my God, really? She has such a good heart, really? I do enjoy her like sort of hysterical laughter there.
Yeah. Just says to herself, why is she crying when she wanted to dance? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, sometimes you just be there. You just get caught up in that very that particular place.
Exactly.
You know, why am I crying when I want to dance? Yeah, she sees Joffrey dying, but it's gone before he's actually dead. So when her chapter opens and the bells are ringing, that's her being like, okay, he's dead. Mm-hmm. It's official. And she's on her way to where she has stashed like her getaway clothes. And she takes the net out of her hair as she's changing. Mm-hmm. And she realizes one of the gemstones is missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she really figures it out immediately, which is remarkable.
Yeah. At first, she's just like, why is this fucking with my head so much? It's nothing. It's an amethyst. But she's putting it together. Yeah. And she's like, I just need to calm down. It fell out. It's not a big deal. It's just in the yard somewhere or in the throne room. Unless, and she starts remembering how Ser Dantos is always talking about how it's magic and the magic was what's going to save her and get him out of here and all that shit. And when he shows up to meet her at this rendezvous spot, she is like on the case immediately. What's up with these fucking gems?
I love it.
I am surprised by it. He seems
to know. You know, like, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if he was going to have been given any real information about what the plot involved.
Yeah.
But based on his responses, he is aware of how this was all carried out.
Yeah. I just want to mention that he is also talking about pie. So.
Oh, does he? Oh, he choked on his pigeon pie. Tasty, tasty pie. interesting.
So I guess like that is what we all want it to look like, that this, you know, he just simply choked to death.
They couldn't have predicted he was going to pick up Tyrion.
This is what I'm saying about the poisoning. That's so weird and like doesn't all the way track, but I'm waiting to see, you know, I figured it will come out, you know, something will come out to make it make sense. But like whenever he was poisoned, like, I guess they just figured the manner of death resembled choking. So it doesn't really matter where he is when it happens because this is a feast. So he's probably, the odds that he's stuffing his face are pretty high. Hmm. And they're just hoping, and they picked the poison that would most likely or most, what's the word I'm looking for?
Mimic?
Yeah, that would most closely mimic choking. You know, and that's why they picked this particular poison is what I'm going with.
Well, who knows? Mm-hmm. We don't. How about that?
He says there was magic in them, and she says there was murder in them.
He's like, shh, 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 shh. Oh my God, don't.
I don't know why I laugh so much, but that really made me laugh.
And he says, your husband's been arrested. And she's like, wait. What? Tyrion poisoned him? And it's like, again, it's even with everything that's happened, it doesn't seem to occur to her. No, he didn't. They arrested him. That does not mean that he did it. She is just immediately like, oh, well, then, like, could he? And remembers he brought Joffrey wine. Like, he was near the chalice. Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. She very quickly switches up, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. And then reaches the conclusion, whether or not he has, it's going to look like I was in on it. And that is going to be quite bad for me.
Yeah.
So regardless of everything, I really do need to make like a tree and get out of
there. Absolutely. I love that. Not that, I mean, if there was any chance that she was going to back out of this plan, you know, and decide not to run away at the last minute for whatever reason, fear or whatever, this event has made it so that that is no longer on the table.
Yeah, very much so.
She has to go now. That door is shut behind her. And I'm curious, like, I wonder, would she have still gone through this if she had had an opportunity to just go back? I like to think she still would have, but... But this is such a harrowing affair, especially like just the climbing down the rock face and all that shit, that I wonder, you know, would she have just been like, you know what? I can't risk it. I will just stay where I am because at least I know my role here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But she is forced to move forward. So yeah, he leads her to this this drop to get down to this little boat, and I mean, I know you have to just do some things when you're trying to like escape, you know, to safety. You know, we all have to make sacrifices. But this was terrible.
I hate heights so bad, and I just like the thought of this, and him specifically being like, "It'll be fine. Just never ever look down."
Mm-mm. Yeah, and like he is like, I know I've said this like 5 times, but it just bears repeating. He is also drunk. Everybody except Sansa is drunk.
Yep.
And like that does not make this trip down the side of the wall any more attractive, knowing that you are the person that I'm making the trip with, and you are like barely standing up straight, you know. Just
yeah, he says something like, "You're worried I'm the one that's drunk, I should be worried." And I'm like, is that better? Like, what do you mean by saying that to her, sir? Just being like, "Ha, well, I might fall and like smash into a million pieces at the bottom, probably basically, more than you."
He reminds her that, like, that's how our whole relationship started. It's because I was drunk and fell off my horse that one time.
God,
he's reminding her, right? Like, I have this long history of falling because I'm drunk. Now, follow me down this side of stairs on the side of this mountain.
Oh, boy. Telio. And finally she reaches the bottom and they get into a boat that is being, rowed by somebody named Oswell.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember who this is because it's mentioned that this guy looks familiar to her and genuinely don't recall. Austin didn't get a chance to send us notes for this episode this week, so I'm sure that he knows and would tell us.
Yeah. But,
it'll have to be something that if there is an answer that I can share with you, because I don't know that if I can, it'll have to wait. But he keeps having to be like, "Hey, shut the fuck up."
Right? A couple times. A couple of times. Because
this dude is talking and talking and he's like, "Sound bounces up over the water, sir. It's like really easy to hear. Knock it off." He's getting real irritated. Yeah,
I would be too. Just putting everybody's life at risk. I want to know who this Oswald guy is now talking to him about. But so they finally get alongside the ship where they're going and they get up there and we get the reveal of who's waiting for her on the ship. And it is our friend Peter Baelish.
Our friend Petyr.
Fucking Dantos from the bottom of the... because he's not even on the ship yet. Mm-mm. He just yells out, "Lord Peter, I need to row back now before they think." Like, why are you yelling?
Why is he here? Because there was no way anybody would suspect him of being in on shit because he is bad at this.
So he's like, basically, yeah, let me go ahead and get those 10,000 dragons and then I'll be on my way, you know? Mm-hmm. And turns out that is not how this is going to go for him. And it's the right thing to do, y'all. Honestly. This is, I am very rarely going to be like, "Yeah, you need to kill that motherfucker." But y'all, they clearly had to kill this motherfucker. He would have blabbed to everybody in a minute.
Absolutely. About,
like real talk, I can't believe he kept his mouth shut long enough for this plan to work. That's I really can't. Even though I knew the plan was the plan, and I remember the plan from the show, and blah, blah, blah. I kept waiting for this shit to blow up before it had a chance to actually work, because I could not believe that this man managed to pull, you know, his part of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make, like, he should have spilled the beans ages ago. And the only thing I can think of is that he just happens to be of so little consequence that no one has ever challenged him on anything.
Agree.
Right? So like, that
even
is,
if he said to somebody, "I'm gonna help Lady Sansa escape on their wedding day," they'd be like, "That's nice, Dantos. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for a nap.
Yeah, go have another drink, Dantos," you know? But like, if anybody had put even an ounce of pressure on him or asked more than one question, this all would have gone up in smoke.
Yeah.
So he was right to kill him. I felt bad, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, you know, the man is out here yelling your name. Over the water.
Listen, which we have already told him that shit bounces everywhere. Like 2 minutes ago, we just told you that.
We just had this conversation, sir. He's so tiresome.
So, yeah. So he is gone now. And Sansa is just like, you know, a little taken aback by it. But Littlefinger's like, listen.
She throws up.
Oh, that's right. That way, does she?
Yeah. I'm trying to find the spot.
Oh, yeah. Santa turned away and ratchet. Yeah, I got it. You killed him, she said. Yeah. So, Peter has to, like, kick the game to her real quick. Look, this is how this shit works. This man, first of all, was not anybody's fucking friend. And she's, but he saved me. And Littlefinger's like, no, he sold you. There is a difference. And I'll tell you what, y'all, that is a really interesting way to look at things. when you think about who helps you, you know, who doesn't help you, and who in your life you consider like, oh, this person is definitely in my corner. And then you start to think, well, what, you know, what are they? And, you know, what kind of benefits do they get from being in, quote, my corner? You know, are they, you know what I mean? Just like I just think,
oh, yeah,
just, makes you look at things. It's harsh. I don't recommend looking at your life through this lens, but I think it's something we all should do every once in a while, because she really was like, she had to have known on an intellectual level that Sir Dantos was not this valiant knight saving her for the good of it, you know, because it was the right thing to do and all that shit, right? Like, she has learned that lesson. But she's still regarding him as if he was her savior.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly why she would be doing that. Maybe that's just her way. Maybe it's because, you know, her age. I don't know.
I think maybe it's the same thing we were saying about the way everybody would see him. It's just that he seems so harmless and incompetent. That the idea he'd be doing this for personal gain, when all he did was talk about how grateful he was that she saved his life. It would just, she just feels like if anybody's going to be taking advantage of anybody, it would be me taking advantage of him somehow. And the idea that he's got a whole other thing going on would not occur to her.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, it's a fair take. So she is feeling like a real disgust at the fact that he's murdered in this way at first. And then again, Littlefinger just has to reframe it for her. What their relationship really was, what he was really doing and why he was doing it. And he was doing it for money. And that the next time somebody comes with money to offer him, he's going to do whatever he has to get it. Again, if that means selling you out, he'll absolutely do that. So yeah, that's it. Santa doesn't feel great about it, but you know what? It's done.
Indeed.
She has a moment where she has sort of a flashback about something that Peter had said to her a long time ago about how life is not a song and that I would learn that one day to my sorrow. And then she just looks at him and she's just like, is it all lies forever and ever, everyone and everything? And it is. And he says, almost everyone, save you and I, of course.
I'm like, you just had lied to that man and killed him in front of her.
Right?
What? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I guess.
So they talk about the note and how it came from him and that he picked the Godswood because it was one of the few places that, in his words, the birds, the little birds and little rats can't be scuttling around because it's out in the open. And that's why he picked it. And, oh my God. And then he starts talking about, is this when he starts talking about his mom? Not his mom. Her mom. Sorry. Ooh, that got weird. Wouldn't that be, how weird would that be?
No.
Sorry. and this is when he tells her about the little jousters and how, you know, he found them and how he had to basically handhold Joffrey into understanding why, you know, it would be important to have them at the wedding. And it's, he doesn't say here explicitly why he wanted Joffrey to antagonize Tyrion in this way.
No.
But I'm thinking, is it lending itself to making Tyrion seem the most suspicious? Because this stunt would have pushed Tyrion over the edge, so to speak. Hmm. You know? So is Peter setting up Tyrion to take the fall for this? And is that what the point of this whole fucking charade was with the jousters? Why?
You said it.
I know, but why? So I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about that, because I'm curious if Tyrion being the suspect, or if they were trying, if Peter and maybe even by extension the Tyrells, I don't know how involved they are with this part of the plan, but trying to set Tyrion up to take the fall in an effort to cover what they have done. If that's what it, you know, because it's not a stretch to understand that practically anybody who knows anything about these people, everybody knows that Cersei hates Tyrion. Like, Peter would know that. The Tyrells would know that. So, it's not a stretch to think that Cersei would already be thinking of Tyrion, right?
Yes.
And then you just throw a little salt on that, you know? Maybe, you know, have these jesters show up and it be so pointedly about Tyrion that Tyrion's name is on everybody's mind. And then this, then he dies and everybody's like, oh, shit, I bet he did it.
Yeah. It's a really, like, interesting concept as a plan as well, because of the fact that Tyrion stays so cool in that encounter with Joffrey, and you could read it as, oh, because he just knew he didn't have to take it too much longer, you know.
Yep.
Like,
yep,
there's a lot of ways that you could choose to read it.
Yep.
That
yep.
would and there's, be bad for him.
And the thing is, it's sort of like a no-win situation, because say Tyrion reacted the opposite and got like all crazy and angry about it, then that also still makes him look hella guilty, right?
Exactly.
So there was like no way to win for Tyrion.
Yep.
With these other people making, like, you know, if it's true that they are like coming for him like that, and he has no idea they're even coming for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I always thought of like the assertion that, you know, everybody that Cersei suspects Tyrion is just sort of like, oh, of course, that's just the nature of their relationship. But this little tidbit about how Peter was involved, which, if I remember correctly, did we know about Peter being behind the jousters in the show? Was that even a thing?
I don't recall.
I don't recall.
I believe
either.
They were in the show. Because I actually asked Owen, because I couldn't remember either, and he said yes.
Okay.
But I don't remember if Peter takes credit for it or not.
All right. So, yeah, so that little bit makes me just look at Peter a little extra side eye. And I already look at him with a side eye, so it's kind of uncomfortable at this point.
But my eye is dislocated. It's really quite painful.
And so, yeah, so he tells her about that. And then, oh my God. I'm sorry, I'm just reading.
What?
Yeah, he's telling her like to go get changed, put on something more comfortable. And she is still, this is all news to her. You know, she had no idea it was going to be Peter on the ship. She doesn't understand like why he would do this. It makes no sense to her, because he's supposed to be, you know, she says, Joffrey gave you Harrenhal, like made you a lord. Like, why would you do this? What's happening? Who are you? And this is when we get the whole the Game of Thrones thing. It's like chaos is a ladder, but not.
I really just am so upset that you made that comparison just now. I don't like that. I think it's really disrespectful. But, fine, I guess. This is, it's so funny too. I occasionally will haunt pages on Facebook about Game of Thrones, especially like using the unspoiled profile to get into arguments with people about show related stuff, just because I like to be a troll. And there was some post somewhere about the writing on the show being like not as good as the books, and the dialogue especially being good in the first couple seasons because it's dialogue lifted almost word for word from the books. And somebody was like, I will say, though, they did really manage to nail it with the Chaos is a Ladder monologue.
Oh,
and
no.
I just had to go up in there. I couldn't resist. I hadn't even intended to, like, do anything that day. And I just went, you know, that's really funny you say that, because to me that's an example of exactly how bad the writing got sometimes. It's not the worst. You know, the dangerous pussy or whatever it is the worst. Bad pussy. Dangerous pussy's even better than bad pussy. Like, it's still so lame and it's still better. But just the fact that anybody thinks that was, like, between that and the, like, what are children other than a weakness? Get the fuck out of here. Fucking monologues, man. I cannot anymore. Anyway. But yeah. And his, basically the whole premise is, oh, I didn't have a motive to do it. That's why nobody's going to have any clue I was involved. There's no reason. And the way that you play this is sometimes you just do shit that doesn't make any sense. Because as long as people don't really get what you're after, they won't be able to predict what you're going to do. Because they won't understand where you're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of like that idea of just being like, oh yeah, sometimes I just do chaos.
Yeah.
Because then nobody has any idea. I'm just like, all right, you know, like, that's playing the very long game. That's mm-hmm. not short-term gains. That's like, oh, I'm going to lay down a groundwork of seeming like...
Right.
He just likes money. He's just the money guy.
Right, exactly. Oh, he just wants power. Well, no, because he got power. He got land and title, and he still killed Joffrey, so that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
And when she asks him the motive, he's just like, why would I want him dead? I'm 1,000 miles away right now. Who are you even talking to?
Truly a mystery.
Oh, little finger.
So yeah, put Joffrey from your mind, sweetling. Dantos, Tyrion, all of them. They will never trouble you again. You are safe now. That's all that matters. You are safe with me and sailing home.
Lies. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what he's got planned, but I know that shit is not safety. So I don't know what's coming, but I expect it to be terrible.
Just like, this is just such a great example of pretty much Sansa's life to this point, is everybody that she, like, winds up in their custody assuring her that those other people were bad, but you'll mm-hmm, be safe with mm-hmm. me. And then in whether it's because they're actually terrible or because they just are impotent in whatever sense, like Tyrion was, that there's just nothing to be done for her. They can't help. They're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a different version of the sort of heartbreak you feel when Arya is so close to her mom and Rob, but yet, you know, not close enough to make any difference. Mm-hmm, and the story mm-hmm. still ends terribly. You know, you have this sort of this rush, this high, because she's finally gotten out of King's Landing. She's away from the Lannisters. Like, her plan worked. She got away. And you want to be, like, excited and relieved and happy. But it's not going to last.
Indeed. So that's the end of the chapter. Dun da da da. We do not have any new patrons since last week. Because I am deeply unappreciated in my time.
Boo.
Someday when I'm dead, these podcasts are going to be worth millions.
There's my 401k plan sorted.
Everybody thinks that I'm the founder, but what they don't know is I've never met the actual owner. I'm the face of the company. She is a hermit-like recluse. I don't know. I've never even seen her. I just know that she had to pay a lot extra to get her office fired. So I have some odd suspicions that I haven't shared. I'm going to build this myth around Unspoiled. What shall it be? It's run by a dragon. It's run by a fire succubus.
Three squirrels in a trench coat. No.
That doesn't really tie into the fireproofing, Rashawn.
Sorry.
Oh my god.
I didn't realize really what you were doing on there. That one. I didn't.
Oh my lord.
I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. I thought we were just naming impossible things. I apologize.
Oh man. Three squirrels in a trench coat. Don't sue me for the slander here. I know that you guys are in charge of the Earwolf Company. Nobody knows. Actually, I think Earwolf is gone now, but anyway, jokes about podcasts. Guys, come become patrons. Come and hang out with us. Tonight, Rashawn and I are going to talk about planning our own funeral. It's going to be a good time. We are going to have some people with the inside scoop on funeral planning, and I'm looking forward to that. And then later this year, on the 28th, we're going to be doing an Unsober about The Circle season 5. And I haven't started watching it yet.
Oh my god.
But I have heard very good things.
Oh my god. So it is. I'm not saying a word. It is. I can't wait for you to watch. I can't wait to hear what you think.
I'm delighted. I love this. Oh. She's getting me so pumped. I don't know who out there needs to hear this, but if you are not watching The Circle because you don't like reality shows, get over it and watch The Circle.
It is like, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil, but I will just say, because the way they managed to just continue to up the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time a new one season drops, I'm like, well, what else can you do? What else
they
can
find
you do?
A way.
Bitch, they find a way.
They really do. I love it for them. They come up with some stuff that has me just like on the floor gasping, like, oh my god.
Girl, when I tell you they snatched me several times. And these, like, I just, go ahead, hurry up and watch it so we can talk, please.
This is one of those where I'm like, I want to watch it live a little bit. Like, I wish that I could do that, but it's such a pain to set that up. But I would really enjoy, live reacts because I react as if I'm live anyway. Like, I know it would be a lot of people would be performing if they were live, but like genuinely when I'm watching, I'm screaming at the screen. I'm standing up. Fist pumping. I mean,
listen, all of that and more. It is. I can't tell you more, but I just want you to know that they are coming for you. And people who are listening, y'all might be like, oh, I didn't think the season was this or was that. But really what is so fascinating to me is the way the creators really do just continue to try to top themselves. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always work across various types of media, you know? Sometimes you're just like, all right, you're jumping the shark or whatever, you know? And that's all I'm going to say. They just,
This is just, it's just not like other reality TV shows. It's just not. It's so much, there's just a warmth to it. And like, not to say people can't be dicks and stuff, because of course, but it's just so much more like creative and interesting. And there's, I don't know, there's like a whole energy to it that I find really uplifting and like fun. So just, highly recommend. Yeah. We've covered other seasons on Unsober before, and we took too long to do it those times. We're doing it pretty close to the air date this time, so that'll be good.
Yeah. The finale, I think, just drops this week. Or maybe this weekend, I think. Mm-hmm. So we won't be that far behind. Because like I told you, they do the thing where they roll it out in installments.
Right, so it started... I think the last installment will be on the 18th, which is the Wednesday before. Or actually, no, 2 Wednesdays before. So it'll be later this week will be the last batch goes up.
Oh, I'm going to. I thought it was going this weekend, but all right. So that's not till Wednesday.
I might be wrong. That's what I've been told. But I'm. They
No. You. I mean, I stayed away from all like the deadlines, and when it dropped, for some reason, I should have paid more attention because every time I was shocked that I had to wait another week for more episodes. Like it got me three times. Every time I was like, wait, what? Next week, what?
It, no.
Like everything just kept catching.
That's why
me.
I haven't started it yet because I can't take it. I did that watching each batch as they came out last time. It was a torment. I couldn't do it. I don't want to go through that again.
This is the first time I've subjected myself to this viewing pattern, and I don't care for it. I will not make this mistake again. And I even was like, you know what? That's it. I'm not watching any more episodes until the whole thing is done. But bitch,
lies.
All
right. And I should mention too that in the Discord there is a channel for the Circle. I think it's just under like isn't covered, but really should be. That's like a section. I can't remember, but people have made sub threads of the batch of episodes so that you can like comment on the current batch after you like just finished it without getting spoiled on the next batch.
I need to get up on there.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. And yeah, here it is, the Circle. And I don't know if they did the sub-threads like they did last time because I have it muted because I haven't watched it. But it's really easy to make sub-threads if they didn't do it for this season. And also, if those of you who are listening are like not sure what the deal is with Unsober in general, I posted a freebie before Christmas of the episode where Rashawn and I are talking about weird Christmas traditions around the world. And I posted that up on Patreon for all listeners, whether you are a patron or not. I also shared the link on all of the platforms, but I'll share the link again in the show notes for this episode. And I will also, I'll do it for the Ted Lasso. So just so you guys can get a sense of what Unsober is like, because it's just a free form. We pick a topic and run with it. And because Rashawn and I could talk for 6 hours straight about absolutely it doesn't take all that much to get us going. And half the time I have a plan and we like hit the first 3% of that plan. And then go completely off the rails.
Remember
and never
we tried
return.
To do mascots and we spent the whole 2 hours talking about McDonald's.
I picked
so
the title
of
the brand mascots. We got to McDonald's and that vein was so rich. We never left. It was too good.
There
if y'all have
so
not looked
much...
at the history of McDonald's brand mascot stuff, go find it because it is truly the most unhinged, slapped together, weird, like fever
this,
dream type
this
shit.
This fucking universe building for McDonald's is wild, y'all. It really...
There's movies. There's weird characters.
All kinds
I've never
of
heard of.
All kinds of weird backstories. Some
the
of
the
first mascots
Ronald
really
McDonald
had...
looked crazy. Do you remember what he with the fucking cup yes. over his nose? Like. You guys, truly, I have learned a lot doing Unsobers. I'll say that.
Oh my God, there's so many fucking facts. They have come up over the years of doing fucking Unsober. It's
All right. Anyway, thank you guys so much. We love you dearly. I hope you're enjoying the show. Until next time, toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.
Joffrey. Cersei. Walder Frey. Meryn Tron, Tywin Lannister,
that was an Unspoiled Network podcast.